There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile, live local talk over the next couple of hours. Glad you're along on this Thursday, and lots to do coming up in just a second. We'll also bring 1 week to an end and start a new week. I know what you're saying. It's Thursday, Sean. Yes, but in the world of the FM Talk 106.5 Fish and Photo Contest brought to you by Sportsman's Marine, this is the transition. So it's a Thursday to Thursday week. We've got a new winner, and we'll name the new winner and talk about the fantastic prize that they win, and talk about the next week of this contest in just about 10 minutes. So that's on the way. And so if you're somebody who has put your fish and photo in there, go double check how you're looking on the Facebook page, and it may be you that we're about to announce. All right, a lot to do on the show today, and I'm going to get into it, talk about some state news, talk about some national news for sure with President Trump tweeting. Was President Trump just trolling the entire nation and the media, or does he really want to delay the election? We'll talk about that in just a little bit. But first, though, on a more solemn note, a man that has been part of this radio station, the Herman Cain Show, was on this radio station. Herman Cain came in and took over for Neil Bortz. Neil Bortz, who was on here 10 years ago when we launched the station, before he retired, when he did retire. Herman Cain, his friend, took over the show and was on here at FM Talk 106.5. And I've been listening to Herman Cain on the radio for a long time, and also listening to his speeches and his different events he did and his run at the presidency. And a very sad loss here at 74 years old, Herman Cain dying of what they're saying, you know, complications from COVID-19. Now, he's been fighting COVID-19 for weeks now, and the news came out about 4 or 5 hours ago that Herman Cain has passed. I thought we'd do this to start off the show, and Herman Cain, full of that energy that had so many of us wrapped up in Herman Cain, whether he's on the radio or he's speaking in public, and this is his announcement for when he was running for the presidency, and this is, I think it happened, yeah, it was in Atlanta, hometown, and he was speaking to the crowd, pretty big crowd there, and announcing his run for president. Let's go take this clip and remember Herman Cain from better days as we get started on Midday Mobile.
I gotta tell you, let me thank you. I see some Antioch people out there. He's with one, a few of them back there yelling, and I understand that my Aunt Bessie is here. Oh, there she is. Now, do you know why it is so momentous that my Aunt Bessie is here? She hasn't decided if she can vote for me yet. But I'm going to change her mind. Just like we're going to change the mind of a lot of folk in America. But I want to thank all of you from the absolute bottom of my heart for you being here, because there were some skeptics, as you know, who didn't think anybody would show up for an announcement for me. And there, the last time I heard, there are 15,000 of you all right here, Centennial Olympic Park. Thank you. You know, it has been this kind of encouragement that has gotten me to this point. And it is this kind of encouragement that I believe and I know is going to take us to where we are trying to get to. You know, many of you know that I grew up right here in Atlanta, Georgia. Right here in Atlanta, Georgia. I stand in the shadows of my upbringing. I stand here today as the son of a chauffeur and a domestic worker who taught me and my brother three of the most important values we could have ever learned: belief in God, belief in what we can do for ourselves, and belief in this exceptional nation called the United States of America. Believe in it. You know, the people that are struggling the most are the ones who don't believe in this nation. They don't believe in the values of this nation. My parents never uttered the words victim because they never felt like a victim having the opportunity to be in this nation despite its challenges. So I stand here today as Luther's and Lenora's oldest son in my hometown. I stand here today in this hour in the shadow of the Olympic flame, which represents not only the determination of those that go to the Olympics every 4 years with their own determination, but it also signifies the great spirit of this great country, the spirit of America. That's what it signifies. And it is the spirit of America and the determination of America and the determination of its people that we are going to take our country back. We're going to take it back. This day, this hour, in the spirit of America and the spirit of the Olympics here in this park, when people go to the Olympics every 4 years, they don't go to the Olympics to come in second. They go to the Olympics to win. And you see, just like the spirit of the Olympics, number two is not in America's DNA. We don't do number two. Right here, this day, this hour, this moment, reminds me of the words to the closing song of the 2000 Olympics. Life can be a challenge. Life can seem impossible. It's never easy when there's so much on the line. But you and I can make a difference. There's a mission just for you. There's a mission just for me. Just look inside and you will find just what you can do. Right here, this day, this hour, and this moment, I have looked inside of me, and at this moment, this day, amongst thousands and thousands of my friends and with my family here with me and associates that I have known throughout the years. This day, this hour, this moment, I came here to declare my candidacy for the Republican nomination for President of the United States of America. This moment. This moment. And just to be clear, in case you accidentally listen to a skeptic or a doubting Thomas out there, just to be clear, let me say it again. I'm running for President of the United States, and I'm not running for second. I'm not running for second. One.
There he was, Better Times, 9 years ago, announcing his run for the presidency. Remember the 999 plan and that whole idea and discussion there? Sad. Sad. A loss way too soon. Herman Cain, age 74, dying of COVID-19. We'll come back more on this. And also, what about delaying the election? Is the president just trolling out there? Or what would your take on this be?
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 1221 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile Thursday style. Phone number 343-0106, 343-0106. And it's, I'm commiserating with folks on the text line and on email here, the passing of Herman Cain way too soon, 74. And somebody said, I'm saying out there that Herman Cain had had colon cancer, that was the cause of death. No, it was, he did, that is true that he had colon cancer, but in the case, they had him on a ventilator, it was COVID-19 that killed Herman Cain. So, something will get all of us eventually, right? But in this case specifically, It was COVID-19 that killed Herman Cain at this point. So, people are reminiscing. Yeah, he was on the station. He took over. Neil Bortz was on the station when we first got it started, all those years ago. And then when Neil Bortz retired, Herman Cain took over there. Speaking of new additions, too, if you didn't catch it, the last couple of days, we've been talking about the big announcement that's starting on Monday at 9 a.m. The Jeff Poor Show debuts here at FM Talk 106.5. So now we are from 6 in the morning till the Paul Feinbaum Show, all live local folks, right here. We're live 7 days a week. We're doing like 58 hours a week of locally sourced programming coming from the studio right here. And it's grown. So another 3 hours a day of live local programming. Jeff Poor, who you've heard over the years, his Jeff Poor Show debuts on Monday at 9 a.m. All right, and let's do this. Let's award this week's fishing photo contest winner, brought to you by Sportsman's Marine. And this is Tracy. Man, I've got to figure out where you're going brim fishing, because looking at all these pictures, Tracy has put a picture through, and you can see this if you go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/FMTalk1065, and go to the fishing photo contest. You'll see the one picture that has the most likes this week, and our week is Thursday to Thursday in this contest, and you'll see a picture of a super bull brim. He's got it sitting on top of and I don't think there's an optical illusion going on here, sitting on top of a bucket. So he's got the bucket flipped over, and he's got this bull brim. Those of y'all that are from other parts, it's a male bluegill. Around here we call him a bull brim. And it's on top of the overturned bucket, and it it is hanging over both sides. It's got its nose over one end, and Taylor, that is unreal, Tracy. What a brim. And that picture wins this week's FM Talk 106.5 Fishing Photo Contest. You can go see all the pictures on our Facebook page, facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5. Tracy wins that FM Talk 106.5 Fishing Team t-shirt with the red snapper on there and the speckled trout, the FM Talk 106.5 logo. It's a long sleeve dry fit shirt. Tracy, fantastic brim, and congratulations on winning this week's Fishing Photo Contest, brought to you by Sportsman's Marine, which means another week of this. So we've been doing this as week 7 we're going into now. Go online, go to our Facebook page, post your fishing photo. Could have you in it, could have a gigantic bull brim in it, could have any kind of fish, kids, whatever. Post that picture up and get out and let folks know your picture's up there. Get them to like your picture on the Facebook page, and the picture with the most likes wins this time next week. So it could be you, just like Tracy Mann. Awesome, Matt. What a fish. And you can go check that picture out and post your picture up right now. Facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5. All right, a couple things here. And I know we could talk some more about the passing of Herman Cain. I'm getting text on that. Also want to add in what is, it would be easy. I don't know. It would be easy for me to sit here and just say, President Trump is trolling the media. President Trump is trolling the Democrats. I would add he's trolling everybody, right? If you want to make that argument. I don't know that that's true. Maybe you can make the argument and tell me that it's true, but here's what came out on Twitter earlier, about 4 or 5 hours ago, from the president. He said, with universal mail-in voting, not absentee voting, which is good, 2020 will be the most inaccurate and fraudulent election in history. It will be a great embarrassment to the USA. Okay, all that stuff right there is stuff the president's talked about, things we've talked about on the show before. But then this last sentence of the tweet, delay the election until people can properly, securely, and safely vote. Now, that's what sets off alarms for a lot of folks, was because, number one, it's not the province. And everybody's saying, well, the president can't delay the election. Well, he didn't say he was going to. He said in there, delay it. But what is the push for delaying an election? I think this is going to get bipartisan pushback out there if it hasn't already. So the president is saying that because of these questions here, that we should delay the election. It's the first time, AP says here, it's the first time President Trump publicly raised the idea of pushing back the balloting. Shifting the election is virtually impossible, but the mere suggestion of the delay was extraordinary in a nation that's held itself as a beacon to the world for its history of peaceful transfer of power, including during the Civil War, the Great Depression, World War II, and marked another bracing attempt by Trump to undermine the confidence in the American political system. Well, listen, is he undermining, or is he pointing out that a lot of people question the system? It goes on to say here, the date of the presidential election, the Tuesday after the first Monday in November in every fourth year, is enshrined in federal law and would require an act of Congress to change. No, really, an act of Congress to change. Lawmakers in both parties slammed the door shut on the notion today. Good, because we don't need to start floating election. I have to agree with those lawmakers in both parties. Regardless, the Constitution makes no provisions for the delay until the end of the president's term, which is noon January 20th, 2021, unless, I hate to tell you, AP, unless he wins re-election. So there it is. Only 5 states, by the way, right now conduct elections entirely by mail, although more states expect to rely more heavily on mail-in ballots in November because of the virus outbreak. California has announced plans to send ballots to all registered voters for the fall election, but will also have in-person voting options available. The president's tweet came just minutes after the government reported that the U.S. economy shrank by 32.9% annual rate in April-June quarter, by far the worst quarterly plunge ever. There you go. So they got to get that in on the AP story. But the question here, if you want to do the due diligence and research, which I think we've done, you know, and discussed and had some folks in here that have studied this, like Dr. Yasensack from the University of South Alabama, there are a lot of questions about mail-in voting. There's a lot of questions about that. But unless he's just being a troll. And I know a lot of people say, well, that's all the president's doing. He's just trying to get a rise out of the media and the Democrats. But you also got a rise out of Republicans when you start talking about delaying an election. So what do you think? What's your take on it? 343-0106, 343-0106. We'll talk about that with you when we come back from the news break. 343-0106. Also on the list here from Washington, Pelosi has put that mask order into effect for the House, and we'll talk about that. And then next hour, it's Will Dismuke's thing. You know, if y'all been looking at this Representative Will Dismuke's thing, earlier in the week when Chairman of Alabama, GOP Chairman Terry Latham came out and rebuked Dismukes, and many others had as well. We were getting part of the story. Now another part of this story coming out, and I don't know how Will Dismukes is going to hang on to support there in his district. We'll talk about what has come out from over the weekend when we come back. Once again, 343-0106, and check us out online, fmtalk1065.com. Also, Instagram, Twitter, and what is that other thing? Oh, yeah, Facebook, where you find the fish pictures. Which, by the way, once again, Tracy, what a brim, man. That's fantastic. Good stuff. Good stuff. You have to tell me more about it when you come get your shirt here at the studios.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 12:35, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile, Thursday style. I'm glad you're along. Phone number 343-0106, 343-0106. Going to the phones. I do want to read. So Ben on the text line said, I just want to start this by saying I believe President Trump is a social media troll master. I'm seeing a lot of the same people demanding we have vote by mail because of COVID, condemning the president's tweet about moving the election. I'm just sure that that's coincidence, though. You can do the same. You can opine on this at 343-0106. Let's go first to John in Wilmer. Hey, John.
Hey, Sean. Listen, I don't know why the Democrats would not be for delaying the election, because, you know, if they don't have a candidate sworn in by January 20th at noon, the Speaker of the House takes over as pro temp.
Yeah, God forbid.
So, yeah, but wouldn't they want that?
Oh, yeah, they may, but I'm one that does not. Remember, yeah, yesterday we talked about what she had to say about giraffes and flamingos mating and all that. So, but here's the problem, and this is where I worry about it, is that when you listen, the president, I agree with Ben. I think he's probably just trolling out there. But when this discussion of stuff comes up where you're just going to move stuff and change stuff, that's not conservative, right? I mean, if there's something going on that is wrong, cheating, something nefarious going on, got to shut it down. But if we start just saying, well, we're going to move this and change this, that's how you start this slow walk or fast walk away from what, you know, what our founding fathers wanted.
Yeah, they're not going to be able to change the election date, because they would take them, as fast as Congress is, it would take them 3 or 4 years to get that pushed through.
Right.
And there's no way they're going to do it anyhow. And if, no matter who wins, there's going to be another collusion investigation somewhere down the road.
Do you think that's where we are now? That it's going to be, while we're going to have a, air quotes here, peaceful transfer of power, that the second that the, the second that the whatever party wins, the other party, you know, starts trying to get them out of office, not through the ballot box, but through some other means?
I think they opened that door. Actually, if you remember during the debates, they specifically asked each candidate, if you lose the election, will you be okay with the results? And all the Democrats said yes, 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 yes. Trump was the only one who hesitated on it. And yet it was the Democrats who pushed this forward with the investigation.
You're right.
Didn't like the results.
You know, he said that again the other night. Was it, maybe it was in the interview he did on Fox News. I forget which interview, or maybe, no, you know what? It was the one that Dalton sent me. He sat down with Portnoy, the guy from Barstool Sports, and he said something to the effect of, they said, would you be, will you accept the results if they don't have you in? He said, I'll just wait and see. I'll just wait and see. And, of course, the same thing you said last time. So he at least has not boxed himself in on that, for sure.
Right. And then ironic that the Democrats said yes, and then they didn't.
Yeah, no joke. And they were active. So would it be okay if Republicans do the same thing when a Democrat goes in office? You know, start a process there. I mean, there's always... Listen, there's always going to be the political wing that tries to unseat people. That's fine. I think the worry is when people that are government officials, you know, elected or, you know, merit-based officials are working on it, like we saw what's happened over the last 3-4 years. So we'll see if that happens going forward. John, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Leaves the line open at 343-0106, 343-0106. And also, let's see, we get the... By the way, the funeral proceedings for John Lewis have been going on, and I think they're, let me look at the monitor here, still going on. This has been, to do this respectfully, respectfully of the dead, and speaking of the dead, but holy cow. And it's listen, it's good because you wanted Alabama, you know, I mean, John Lewis, a son of the state of Alabama, to be able to honor John Lewis and of course his home in Georgia and where he held office there, and what did Bryan State in Washington. But I mean, it's been from the traveling that, you know, it's just taken a long time to bury John Lewis, for sure. And I guess it's warranted with all the places going. It just seems like it. I don't know. It's just strange to me to see. It's been a week and something. I mean, it was Sunday, I guess Saturday proceedings started here in Alabama, and then, but I mean, he had been dead the previous week. It's just, I guess that's what happened. You look at, you know, big name folks, and, you know, with us little name folks out there, they put us in the ground a lot more quickly, I guess. All right. We'll get into this story here in just a few about Will Dismukes, speaking of which, and we'll talk about that coming up in the last segment of this hour, the first segment of last hour. Also, I saw AL.com had a story up this morning about evictions. Did you see this? So they're saying a study out. Now, I want to point out, too, here's how you look at these stories. It's an AL.com story, and don't doubt that they're trying to quote things accurately from the information they're given. But the information they're given came from Arise, Alabama, that has a political bent. Okay, so let's work through this right now. William Thornton did the story for AL.com, said almost half of people who rent their homes in the state of Alabama are in danger of losing them due to continuing economic peril wrought by COVID-19 pandemic. Now, almost half. We'll get to the real numbers here in a second. It says, that's according to a new study by global advisory firm Stout Rissius Ross. Sounds like a character from some kind of gladiator movie. But it's not only the dire estimate of how many Alabamians might be in danger of losing their home. Today, President Donald Trump urged Congress to extend a ban on eviction for renters who live in buildings with federally backed loans, a ban which ended last week. So make sure you note that. That's President Trump. Urge Congress to extend the ban on eviction. The Aspen Institute estimates up to 23 million Americans could face eviction. All right. President Trump said you got to work on the eviction so people don't get evicted. He urged Congress to also work on passing the second round of stimulus checks. We know that part of it. Okay, so it goes in here to the Alabama portion of the story. It said Governor Kay Ivey allowed a statewide eviction moratorium to end on June 1st. There are several estimates for how many Alabamians may face eviction caused by the consequences of COVID-19 lockdown. Although it's unclear, since the coronavirus pandemic began on March 6th, which I think it started earlier than that, but it's 69,727 Alabamians filed for unemployment, although it's unclear how many of those filers have since returned to their jobs. About 31% of Alabama's housing is in rental properties. So the study says 48.25% of Alabama renters face eviction. I want to talk to landlords out there. If y'all, does that jive with what you're dealing with? The study's saying 48.25%. 25% of Alabama renters face eviction, or about 246,000 rented households unable to pay rent. That adds up to about a $214 million in rent shortfalls. Study estimates the potential for 166,000 eviction filings within the next 4 months in Alabama. Arise Alabama, a nonprofit organization working to promote policies for the poor, puts the eviction number higher. They say 361,600 people. It calculates that number based on figures from the Center for Economic Policy Research and the Center for Budget and Policy Priority. David Wakely, policy analyst with Alabama Arise, said the total in jeopardy adds up to about 8% of the state's population facing the loss of their homes. But I want to go back to this. They're saying 48.2% are not going to make rent. The study shows 48.25% of Alabama renters face eviction. So that not only did they just not make rent, they hadn't made rent for what is it, 2 months? And now they're facing eviction. If you're in the if you're in the real estate business, in the rental business out there, does that line up with what you're seeing? I mean, this is a story from AL.com. They're quoting these groups out there that are analyzing, but where the best information comes from is you. So if you are in the business, if you're somebody that works with, your rental agency, or you yourself have the properties, and let's keep it not commercial properties, let's do it at, residential, because that's what this story's about. Does that line up? Is it 48.2%? 48.25% of your renters that are behind on this? That seems it just seems, I'm not saying there's not real issues out there, but that number is so over the top, and there's so many groups that are kind of quoted in this story. I wonder if it's an amalgamation of this, that, and the other, and you kind of bump up or plus this one or bump up or plus that one, or is it spot on? So somebody, and you can stay anonymous, just hit us up on the text line at 343-0106. Residential, not commercial, although commercial is a whole other story about renters out there, but this is specific here in this story. This is specific to residential. That's 48.25% are facing eviction? All right, if you got your numbers on your side, let me know what you're seeing, and we'll be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 1251 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Some great perspective here, and that's what I love about doing this. Really, I'm really lucky to have the opportunity to do this for a living and talk with y'all and get perspective from a lot of different parts. Because I saw the story. So if you're just tuning in, by the way, hey, I'm Sean. This is Midday Mobile. Glad you're here. We're looking at AL.com story, and in the AL.com story, they were on the headline here, up to 48% of Alabama renters in danger of eviction, study says. And at one point down here, they're quoting some different surveys that were done, talking about the eviction, the statewide eviction moratorium, and then the national moratorium. But they got into a Stout Rhesus Ross study says 48.25% of Alabama renters face eviction, or about 246,000 rented households. That one left me slack-jawed. I knew it would be, obviously, in this situation, it wouldn't be perfect, but I mean, that would, even me as a communications major, I can tell you 48.25% is almost half of the renters in the state. So it left me shocked. So I was asking the question of you that are in the business here, what's it like out there? And so I'm seeing a mix here. So Let's see. This one from Tim. He said, no, all my renters have paid their rent, but most of mine is commercial. And so, I mean, that's partially mixed in. That story, that AL.com story, I think is the residential. But it said, from past experience, once you get that far behind, you'll never catch up. So eventually, they will have to move them. Most of these people are high maintenance anyway, so you give them an inch and they'll take a mile. Okay. Then this texter says, I manage 146 properties for 118 owners in the Gulf Shores, Foley, Orange Beach, Pensacola area, and our rent payments have not been any different than before the outbreak. So you see, this is very interesting because there's AL.com story, and then this is like complete 180 different. Said, we had tenants call in at the beginning, worried, but have not been late, and no one has called with concerns for August or September rent yet. And this person's managing 146 properties for 118 owners, and no issue. They said early on, tenants called in, which is a good thing. People didn't know what was happening back then, trying to figure out what they could do. But this person's had no issue. All right, let's see. And yeah, this text, there's a lot of this coming in. Okay, on section eight. So this person said, I wish my number was that low. And this person had texted when I said the 48.25%. It said, I wish my number was that low. I'm looking at 80% to 95%. 80%, I guess, residential, 95% commercial. He said, anything not section 8. They were aware they couldn't be anything not Section 8. They were aware they couldn't be evicted, so they stopped paying. These are folks that, well, so they won't, but this is a little more confusing, right? Because that wouldn't show up in the evictions stats, I guess, until now. I guess that's the idea, that those might have been under eviction protection, but now you're looking at the state eviction moratorium has expired. And they haven't passed anything more nationally. All right, so I have 15 homes, 5 Section 8, 10 normal rent, 8 of 10. 8 of 10 are delinquent over the past 90 days. Wow. Now, wow. Yeah, and that's another question. So so Tim's saying, who's going to pay the note on the house that they're living in if they're not paying the rent? This is the so you have the eviction, and that's, you have the eviction moratorium in place, but then what do you tell the owners of the houses that have to pay notes on them, right? And what are you going to do with that? Now, PPP has money, because if people say, well, the PPP had money for rent. Now, PPP has money for somebody like us at FM Talk 106.5. We rent our space here, our opulent studios right here at Airport and 65. So we could apply PPP money to pay our rent, but if somebody is not paying the rent, then the company that owns the property can't, I don't believe, unless they change something here, apply PPP money for the rent that they did not receive. So I don't know what's going to happen. But, I mean, that number, that story, really, once again, y'all, and you can, I'll pop this up on the Twitter feed, at FM Talk 106.5, but this one study shows 48.25% of Alabama renters face eviction. Now, if that means that basically half of the renters in the state of Alabama are behind, how do they get caught up? What do you do? How much, you know, you got the president even asking for eviction protection, but how much meddling does the federal government need to do in that going forward? Because if they tell a landlord that they can't evict somebody, but they don't give them cash flow to pay, I don't know how you move forward with it. All right. Hey, coming up next hour, this story continues to get worse here. And the story of Will Dismukes, Representative Will Dismukes, we talked about a little bit earlier in the week. He was at the birthday event for Nathaniel Bedford Forrest up at Fort Dixie, and I think maybe you've seen the invitation to this event. Now, he's an elected rep in District 88. And talked earlier in the week about this and said, you know, how much was this guy, you know, being ignorant or tone deaf, or how much is this guy just actively, you know, a bigot? Well, more of this story has come out now. And it's, I don't know how He's now resigned from his church. I guess I heard the story today, resigned from his church, but there's more on this from Alabama Daily News. We'll get that story when we get back. And it's not been a good news cycle for young Will Disneyks, for sure. All right, that and your calls when we come back at 343-0106. 343-0106. It's Midday Mobile. Glad you're here.